Blog Talk Radio.
Does the dating scene make you want to scream sometimes? Why can't I meet anyone nice? Why can't I meet anyone whose thoughts are deeper than a crack in the sidewalk? Or why can't my friends find anyone so I don't have to hear their drama? My guest today helps people break through that challenge through what he calls deeper dating, how to connect on a more intimate level while getting to know someone to see if you're on the same page. We'll hear from him right after my public speaking tip of the week here on Full Speech Ahead, so stay tuned.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Free at last! Free at last! Thank God Almighty! We are free at last!
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Each one of you has your own platform. Mine is a stage in a studio. Yours is wherever you are.
Welcome to Full Speech Ahead. I'm your host, public speaking coach Milo Shapiro from publicdynamics.com. Before we get to my guest today on finding deeper connection in the dating world, here's my public speaking tip of the week. Let's talk about vocal variety. Those of you who are familiar with me know that I talk about the 7 variants of vocal variety because of the years that I heard people say, she should use more vocal variety, or I like the vocal variety in that section, but they weren't specific enough that the person knew what to do with it. So I've broken it down to 7 parts. And today's topic is pitch. Most men tend to go from medium to low, medium to low. Most women tend to go from high to medium, high to medium. Except some business women who've trained themselves out of it, and now they're only doing medium to low also. When you can have high, medium, and low, all part of your speech pattern, you're actually making what you have to say sound more interesting. Men feel challenged by this because they're afraid they'll sound effeminate or odd if they go into their high register, but I'm not talking about spending time like this. I'm talking about just going up for a word here and there, a sentence like, you know, there is a reason that we're going into this meeting. When I went up on is, I gave some emphasis to it. And then I could come down on meeting as well. There is a reason we're going to this meeting. By going this meeting, I've now said that this meeting is different than another by changing my pitch. So don't be afraid to play with your pitch a little bit more. It's going to make you more interesting to listen to. And now, on with this week's interview. My guest today is licensed clinical social worker Ken Page. Ken is a psychotherapist and the author of Psychology Today's popular blog, Finding Love. He's also the author of the upcoming book, Deeper Dating. Ken is the founder of Deeper Dating, a dating event which has brought insight and intimacy to the lives of thousands of single men and women of all ages, life circumstances, and even sexual orientation. Ken, welcome to Full Speech Ahead.
Thank you, Milo. Glad to be here.
So I'm curious, what started this whole process? Did this come from a personal place? Did this come from things you were hearing from your clients? What led you to the finding love, gift theory, and deeper dating?
Well, you know, all of that kind of really came together. I'm a psychotherapist, and I've led many, many workshops on personal growth and on intimacy. And I'm someone who has been single for a long time. I called myself chronically single for a very long time. And so I had a lot of discovery to do on my own for myself about why my dating life wasn't working. At the same time, of course, I've had so many clients that were struggling with the same kind of questions and the same dilemmas that they kept hitting. And even broader than that, not just for single people, but for everyone, it's almost a universal thing, this hunger for deeper intimacy. And that has been kind of the most important subject of my own exploration and my own work. So all those things together led me to develop this kind of construct, this concept of gift theory, and changed my dating life. I'm in a wonderful relationship now, and has helped so many single people, because really the messages we get about how to find love are fatally flawed.
What kind of messages are we getting? Let's start with that, because that seems like an important part to build from.
I think that's true. Well, okay, so how do you find what the messages are? You go to any magazine rack. any magazine stand and you look at the articles, mostly for women, but now somewhat for men too, about how to find love. They're all the same.
Yeah, I don't think that they're afraid of that in the men's magazine that anymore, that they realize their target audience wants to talk about something a little bit more than the stuff that has been covered historically with the expectations of men, that men don't want to be single either, and that we need to talk about that topic.
Exactly. And, you know, behind every article title, how to get a six-pack, how to get six-pack abs, is the subtitle, and get the sex and love that you're looking for. So, I mean, they don't say that, but that's why the guys pick up the magazine.
Actually, I think I've seen pretty much that on occasion, too.
Right, occasionally. That's absolutely right, yeah. Basically, here's what they tell you. Be confident, be successful, dress sharp, lose weight, and get in shape, and that's how you find love. And plus, for the gals, it's all about the accessories. But it's all the same message, and the message is, you have to create a kind of airbrushed version of yourself. You've got to improve yourself if you want to find love. Now, if you want to find sex, yes, those things are right on target. If you want to get a lot of dates, like quick dates, those things are on target. But if you want to find real lasting love, those are not really the ways that are going to help you find it. I mean, if you think about it, like, of the people you know, Milo, who are gorgeous, successful, witty, and confident, are they more lucky in real lasting love than anybody else?
No, it seems like a lot of them are single.
Yeah. And God knows how many hours they have spent in getting ready, but they're still single. Because really, those are not the ways you find love. And so what I've done is kind of develop a whole system, a whole approach to what I have found really works if you're looking for the real thing. And what's amazing about it is that journey is a spiritual journey, and it's a personal journey. It's a journey of empowerment, and it's a journey that feeds your whole life, because the way to find love is not through mechanisms other than love. The way to find love is to grow in love and your ability to love. So that's what I present single people with, and it's just a much happier, it's very challenging, but it's a much happier and healthier and positive approach to finding a partner.
You used a phrase a while back that I wanted to come back to because it seemed like it was important. What do you mean by gift theory?
Gift theory circles around something that I have discovered in my countless hours sitting in my room as a therapist client. And the heart of it is, and found again and again, that our deepest wounds allow our greatest gifts. So what does that mean? That means...
Can you say it again? I want to make sure people caught that, because that sounds like it's a big part of this. Your deepest wound is one of your greatest gifts?
Your deepest wounds surround your greatest gifts.
Surround, okay.
Yeah. And I have found that to be really true. And so... So what does that mean? That means, and when I say gifts, I don't mean talents, and I don't mean skills. When I say gifts, I mean the places of your deepest sensitivity, the places you care the most, the places that touch you the most, anger you, hurt you, give you joy, give you meaning, the places of your deepest passion. Those are, you could say, kind of the places where your soul lives, but because they're the places you care the most, they're the places you're the most sensitive, and they're the places we get hurt the worst.
And I would think they're the places that are the toughest to bring to the dating table. So I want to talk to you a little bit more about that right after we come back from this brief message.
Not another boring conference.
Liven it up with Improv Ventures and the fun of improvisation. Check out motivational speeches and entertainment that get everyone learning through play and laughter. For smaller groups, Teamprovising is our teamwork and communication program with more feedback and fun. Plus public dynamics, keynotes, training, and coaching on public speaking skills. You can be more effective in front of groups. Learn more today.
Improv Ventures, 619-542-0761, or see videos at improvevents.com.
We're back, and we're talking with Ken Page about deeper dating. So the stuff that you were saying, I get why we want to have connection on that level. And in the long run, in a relationship, we want people who resonate with us
on those innermost places where we have those gifts that you were talking about. But I have to admit, if someone brought that up on a first date, I would be overwhelmed. How do you find on a first date that right balance of, I don't want this to be a waste of time, I want to connect with people, I want to find out if this is someone I can connect with, without scaring them?
Right. And that's an art. That is absolutely an art. You go on a date with someone, and some tips. You know, everyone thinks they have to kind of act kind of cool, play a little hard to get. Not true, and really not true on a first date. I mean, you don't want to be all over the person, but if you allow yourself to be kind, to be thoughtful, to listen and to ask questions, and when you share about the things you're excited about, you're enthusiastic about, that touch you, that move you, and ask the same from the person you're dating. You know, of course you feel out what feels like a healthy and right level to do that at, but just by doing those things, you're going to change the nature of the date.
I think even if you kept it in mind, even if you didn't make it a goal, if it was just kind of like a mantra in the back of your head, I'm going to be kind, I'm going to find out more about this person, I'm going to express a little bit more of myself, even if it was just kind of a behind-the-scenes thought, it wouldn't have to be a radical shift.
You're exactly right. That's exactly true. And then you watch. And you notice, is this someone that appreciates that? Someone that seems to value that? Someone that even, you know, can give the same back to you? And if so, you found someone really special, whether or not they end up being your partner. And if not, you give them a little bit of a break because it's a first date and not everybody has heard your interview with me and people don't know what to do. But you just notice. You notice the person. And if over time, over like a couple dates, that person doesn't seem like someone that gets that, then it's probably not going to be a match for you.
And it's maybe just time to let it go instead of trying to force it to be there or to create that in your mind when it's not really happening.
Absolutely. You know, the first step is to understand what your gifts are, your what I call core gifts.
I was about to ask about that because I think for a lot of people that could be a really big first step to figure out what is it that I bring to the table. You know, if I just say I consider myself a nice guy and I want to have fun, that's probably not really what you're looking at by finding your own gift. So how does one do that?
Yeah, and that's rich and complicated, and I will give like a brief overview, but I will say that in my workshops, like when they end, in my teleclasses, when they end, so many people have pretty radical shifts, pretty significant shifts in the kind of people they're meeting and the way that they date, and still say to me, even more important than that was learning what my core gifts were, because they tripped me up again and again and again in my life, and I thought I had to suppress them. I didn't know I needed to honor them and actually even lead with them. So how do you find out what your core gifts are? There are three main ways that you can discover your core gifts. And, you know, this is I teach this in my Psychology Today blog, and you can read more about it if you go to deeperdating.com. But so what are the ways that you do that? One way that you find your core gifts are through your joys. So if you think about the things that touch you and move you and give you the greatest happiness in your life, the greatest emotional happiness. I mean, everyone would love a Ferrari. A great cup of coffee is wonderful. But what are the things that emotionally really bring you joy? That's one thing you look at. And if you look at that and you start noticing the things in your day-to-day life that really kind of make your heart fill, you will have a key to what those core gifts are. You will learn something from that.
And so you start bringing those up somehow in the dating setting, or you just use that to help you figure out what you're looking for in another person? How do you tie that into figuring out whether you're with the right person and making the date work?
The more you're in touch with that, the more you radiate something that kind of draws people, because you're in touch with your happiness, and God knows that kind of happiness draws people to you. So that's one way, is through your, like, really recognizing what your joys are, really validating them and following them more. Another way, and this is an amazing way, a really interesting way, is knowing kind of, you learn your gifts through your suffering in some ways. And I'll give you an example. It's for you, this is for everyone, to just ask yourself. what qualities of sensitivity in you, in your life, have sometimes felt more like a curse than a gift? Think about your answer to that, and whatever your answer is going to be, that's one of your core gifts.
That sounds like a question that could keep people busy for quite a while. And I'm going to give them a chance to think about that as we go to our second break. We'll be right back after this.
Got photos that need improvement? Freshen your photo. Old family shots that have gotten damaged? Freshen your photo. Want someone or something removed from a picture? Freshen your photo. At freshenyourphoto.com, we turn the pictures you have into the pictures you want. Add muscle, lose weight, lighten baseline, whiten teeth, fix darker off-color shots. See before and afters from dozens of happy customers at freshenyourphoto.com. That's freshenyourphoto.com.
There's someone in my life, I won't say who in case he's listening at some point, who spent many, many years single, and he went on a lot of dates.
Is this me?
I'm more cryptic than that. The problem he had was he met women time and time again who thought, you are just the kind of buddy I want to have. And he always met these women who didn't just say, we really should be friends, because that's an easy way of just getting out of not saying I don't want to be around you. They would call again and again and want to be his friend. And I think it's because, on some level, he was very open and very comfortable with who he was, and they did resonate with that. They just didn't get that. I don't know if it was a sexual thing or if it was a chemistry thing. That spark, I guess, that made them want to date him instead of being his friend.
Okay, that's a really, really interesting question. So if you imagine, if you just imagine something like an attraction spectrum, where 0 is you look at somebody and you're just completely not physically attracted or romantically attracted. 0. And a 10 is like the kind of person you're so attracted to that your throat gets dry and your knees get weak and you start feeling sick inside. And, you know, all these physical symptoms come up, like that unbelievably intense sexual and romantic desire. That's a 0. That's a 10.
Okay.
Well, what couples theory has shown us that is so amazing is that the people who are like the 9s and the 10s turn us on so insanely, largely because they embody the worst characteristics of our primary caregivers.
Oh, great. So you really should pay no attention to that at all. That's frightening.
It's amazing. Now, they also embody some of the best characteristics.
Oh, good.
But the unconscious piece that drives this is they embody the worst. And here's what's happening, is that some deep and not so conscious part of you thinks, this is the one who never loved me enough. I'm finally going to get them to love me. And it triggers an impulse and an intensity unconsciously so deep and so profound that, these are the obsessive relationships, the compulsive relationships. This is what happens, is that if somebody is partly available and partly unavailable, most of us go bonkers. It's incredibly attractive. It's not good, but it's incredibly seductive, because we want to get the love that what they trigger in us is, well, yeah. I know I don't really deserve all the love I want, because, you know, we all have our insecurities. And yet, but this person almost could give it to me. So then we become really attractive. Now, what I teach people how to do is don't just look at the 8s, the 9s, and the 10s. Look at the 4s, the 5s, the 6s, and the 7s. The people for whom there's like maybe some spark, but not that like sick and dizzy kind of spark. And see what grows in that. If we want to really crudely, crassly, and oversimplifiedly, if that's a word, divide the people you date into two categories, we're going to call them attractions of inspiration and attractions of people you're attracted to.
Mm-hmm.
Attractions of inspiration and attractions of deprivation.
Okay.
Now, those are two totally different circuitries that each one of us have. Attraction of deprivation is someone who's not totally available, but somewhat available, someone who maybe treats you well some of the time, and then doesn't treat you well other of the time. someone who's kind most of the time, but then unkind, someone who gives, offers love and then takes it away. Now, those are attractions of deprivation, and every one of us just about is going to be really turned on to those people.
Why? Why does that work? You hear about women saying, I am never doing a bad boy again, and then they do. I watched that with my female friends so many times, and that's what, I'll call him John, that's what my friend John kept saying was happening to him with the women. He would become friends with some of them, and they would go out with these guys who were so wrong for them, and like definitions of attraction of deprivation. So why is that so appealing?
Okay, here's the thing. It's partly because we have a physical type, but it's not just the physical type, it's the emotional type. We go for that little touch of anger, that little touch of cockiness, that little touch of unavailability, because for the reasons that I said, it triggers an intense desire to hunt down the thing that's not accessible, because that's what's going to bring us happiness. So are we going to stop becoming attracted to those people? No. But as Marianne Williamson says, the problem is not that you're attracted to the wrong people. The problem is you give them your phone number.
Because it's okay to enjoy the attraction. You just got to keep it to yourself.
Exactly, exactly. And people need to be trained and they need to be taught. Now, there's another kind of attraction, and it builds slower and it lasts longer. And it's the kind we're looking for. And that's an attraction of inspiration. That's someone who inspires you by the kind of person they are, by the way they try to live, and by how they treat you. Now, when you find someone like that, there's like maybe a warm glow, but very often it feels like friendship. It doesn't necessarily feel like, it often doesn't feel like, well, I'm going to be nice and I'm going to go through my requisite few dates, but I would love to jump this person's bones. It doesn't necessarily feel like that. It feels like a subtler thing. These attractions of inspiration grow. And if we allow them to grow and we allow ourselves to bring in our sexual fantasies in these relationships, these are the people that we could really risk showing our real selves with. They're the ones we want. And there has to be some physical attraction. I'm not saying you should force yourself to date someone you're not attracted to, but there's a self-training that happens because we can't force our attractions, but we can educate them. So I just want to encourage everybody who's out there dating, if you find someone who's more of an attraction of inspiration and there's some physical spark, go for a second date, go for a third date, really put your heart into it and see what happens, and you might find something amazing happening.
And what I like about that is you didn't say, you know, this is probably the person for you, let go of that. What you said was, see if it comes in 3 dates. And 3 dates is a reasonable amount of time to go, nope, it's still not happening, or to see if it seems to be growing a little bit.
Exactly, exactly. And you might not want to sleep with the person, but you might be having your second date with them and you just want to rest your hand on his or her hand. And so you do that. And then there's like a little bit of a sense of friction, of electricity, of warmth. Then you think you want maybe to do something else. The sexual attraction can grow in these attractions of inspiration in an amazing way if we let it. We haven't been taught that. So we think to ourselves, oh, God, I'm not going to do this to that person. I'm not going to disappoint them and let them down. I'm going to be honest with myself. There's not enough attraction here. And we blow it again and again by not giving these relationships a chance.
Interesting. And by the way, the end of the story on John is he's very happily married now. And I think part of it is that he never gave up on continuing to just be himself until he found a woman who wanted what he had to offer. He couldn't be happier now. They're great together.
These are great stories, Milo. They're great. Yeah. You've got to know about the wave. And the wave is the single, in my opinion, it's the single greatest saboteur of healthy new relationships that exists on the planet.
Well, I'm glad we backtracked to that. That sounds important. Okay, what's the wave?
Okay, the wave is you meet someone. Maybe it's an attraction of inspiration. You're attracted. You like the person. The feelings grow. And then lo and behold, you find that they are both kind, caring, and most scary of all, available. Available! They're there. They call you. They want to see you. They want to see you frequently. They don't get mean. They don't get crazy. And all of a sudden you feel like, oh, my God, I am bored.
Or, I thought you were going to say I'm waiting for the shoe to drop, because that's when you find out he's got a prison record.
Right. Yes, that can happen too. But, you know, when
I get that bored thing, that, yes, I have heard that from friends many times. Like, you know, it's going so nicely, I just don't know. It's like, what do you mean it's going nicely?
All of a sudden, you start feeling repulsed by the person. Like their laugh just makes you want to run out the door. Or the way they talk to people on tech cashiers, that's just over-friendly. Or just something just makes you want to scream. And you just feel like you want to get away from them. Or all of a sudden, you don't feel sexually attracted anymore. You did, but you don't anymore. Or you start remembering how nice it was to be back getting the thrill of the hunt.
Yeah, that thrill of the hunt is a big thing for people, that they have to remember that wasn't what the thing was supposed to start with, but they kind of miss that, the excitement of it, because
exactly. Just
niceness isn't exciting, it's just nice.
Right, exactly. So, people leave. They say, they think two things. One, they think the person's not right, and they think they just got to get away because they don't want to let themselves down or the other person down. The other thing they think underneath that is, oh man, I am really messed up. Like, I can't even fall for a nice person. But what the heck? I'm going back on the merry-go-round. It's a sad kind of thing. Now, what we don't get taught is that there's a way past that wave. And this is the way past the wave. For all of you that have experienced it, here's what you do. You remember that it's like a wave. And a wave knocks into you, and then it passes. If you could stay with that person, you know, don't force yourself to be more sexual, more intimate with them than you're ready to be. Give yourself maybe a drop of space, but start noticing what you appreciate about them. Start allowing yourself maybe to get more vulnerable, to ask for things you want with them. Not like a diamond ring, but, you know, physical things, or, hey, you know, I really wanted to go to see this exhibit. Would you come with me? Maybe something you wouldn't have asked someone else. Allow yourself to kind of ask for more. Take a little bit of space, and the wave is going to pass. And here's what's going to happen. Your attraction is probably going to come back. And when it does, you're going to look at that person, you're going to have a better sense if they're right for you or not. But I lost decades being a victim of that wave until I learned this lesson, that the wave passes. You just have to let it. That's when the love grows even stronger.
So talk about what deeper dating is, literally, and how people can incorporate it depending on where they live.
So what I have to offer is a 5-series class called The Wiser Path to Love. And you can just go to my website at deeperdating.com, read my writing, my interviews with people, and find out more about this class. Because in this class, I take a group of people through every one of these steps, discovering your core gift, leading with your core gifts in your dating life, being able to distinguish between your attractions of deprivation and inspiration, and then learning how to grow the romantic, sexual, intimate connection in a healthy relationship.
And this is in a conference call setup.
What happens is I lecture for 45 minutes, and in that lecture are exercises people do to take them step by step through the process, and then the last 30 minutes is coaching. People bring up their situations they're in, and, you know, being a therapist and a coach with this material, I coach them kind of in front of everyone else. It's a really wonderful growing experience for everyone.
Sure. And I know from my own coaching that although it's always best to be the one being coached, you can learn so much about yourself by watching how other people are being coached. So really, even if it was 200 people on the call, people could get plenty out of the people that you are giving one-on-one advice to.
Absolutely. And friendships and dating do end up happening as part of that process.
So I want to reiterate, it's just the way it sounds, deeperdating.com. My guest has been Ken Page, who is the author of the forthcoming book called Deeper Dating. Just a reminder that my own website for coaching and training in public speaking is publicdynamics.com. I'm also available for my team building course, Teamprovising, where we use games of improvisation to look at teamwork, creativity, and communication. My motivational speeches on risk-taking get the whole audience playing along. More about that at improvevents.com. I'm Milo Shapiro, and I am always moving full speech ahead.
See you next time. Bye.